Welcome to the Akashic Reading Podcast, presented by AkashicReading.com, the place where you can learn to access your soul's wisdom, or at least stop digging the hole any deeper. I'm your host, Terry Uktana, and today we'll be doing a deep dive into who your spirit guides are and the variety of means you can use to communicate with them directly and consciously. One of the most common requests I receive is to help a student or client learn who their guides are and how to communicate more clearly with them. Each living person has a team of guides, our entourage, as it were. They're beings who have agreed their sole purpose while we're embodied is to support us in this life. The average number of guides is 3 to 7, depending on the needs of the soul and the life they've planned. Most people never notice them because, like good backstage hands, guides work behind the scenes and try to keep themselves out of the way so the focus can be on the actors and the stage. These spirit guides are responsible for supporting various aspects of the embodied soul's experience. They're there to have our backs, fill in the gaps, help us to achieve what we're striving for at any given moment, try to keep us on the straight and narrow so we don't get too far off track, and provide the necessary stimulus for each phase of our embodied life, however we have it laid out. In general, all guides have to work within specific guidelines. The first and most important of all is they cannot take away our free will. We are not puppets they're controlling. Quite the opposite, in fact. We're free agents who can do whatever we wish in each moment. We are the ones in control, the ones in the driver's seat and with boots on the ground, quite literally. Unless specifically contracted to do otherwise, guides are required to interact with us in a way which doesn't attract our conscious attention. No appearing visually to provide us messages from on high, writing things in the sand or dust or dirt in clear language, no whispering whole paragraphs in our ears like someone giving us the answers to the test on the sly, or popping whatever tool we need into our hands like a genie. That would be cool, but would also interrupt what we're trying to do here. There is a caveat to this. If we consciously reach out to contact them, then they're allowed to interact with us more directly, respond to requests, and become more directly involved in our life per our invitation. This is why it's important to know how to communicate clearly with them so we're able to give them the permission they need to more fully interact. The way to understand this is to think of your guides not as enlightened spiritual beings who are acting as authorities or parents to us, but instead as employees who we have hired to accomplish a task. We're the leader of our team and the only one with authority to determine how we are interacted with and how much. Pleas for our guides to take on this responsibility will go unheeded since they can't. They're here to support us, but not to co-opt our lives. In general, people don't recognize the communication and support they get from their guides because it isn't dramatic, like a book pushed off a shelf right in front of their feet or a voice talking in their ear. It comes in the form of intuition, dreams, synchronicities, and coincidence. Some people have found means of consciously connecting with their guides, but the communication can be limited. They use pendulums or dowsing to ask yes or no questions, find answers to the questions they pose in street signs, songs on the radio, or passages in books they're reading, or are surprised by a message from a friend, which is obviously a direct response to their spiritual request. I call this grouping of communication methods charades because it has much the same quality of guesswork. You pose the question, get an answer or part of an answer, and then have to puzzle out what the full meaning is. There are more direct means of communicating with guides, but developing and using them can be problematic. Some people have a natural aptitude for clairaudience, and so can hear their guides and other beings in real time as they go about their lives. Not everyone has this ability, and those who do can't always control it. It can get stuck in the on position, meaning they hear everything all the time, or it can be what is thought of as a wild talent, only working when it wants to and often when less than convenient. Some people have the ability to see guides and communicate with them in real time, which suffers from the same issues as clairaudience. Automatic writing can be a bit easier, but requires the person to focus, meaning they can't do anything else in the moment. Don't automatic write and drive. In the end, If we're interested in communicating consciously with the beings who support us in this embodied life, we'll find a means which works for us and for them. For those just starting to look for a means of communicating with their guides, or for my students and clients who are frustrated with the methods they're using, I recommend they invite their guides to a conversation in their Akashic room. Each of us, during embodied life, has an Akashic room. This is a room set aside specifically for us. No one may enter it without our permission. It reflects the life we're leading in each moment and supports us in engaging more fully not only in the practicalities of living, but of incorporating our spiritual path and the true nature of our soul into those practicalities. It's a place where we can investigate current problems, learn about the reason why we embodied, what's possible for us in this lifetime, conceive and work through manifesting things into being, and so much more. Most Akashic rooms are somewhat open floor plan, but divided by furniture into functional areas. Some have beds, dining tables, conference room, workshop corners, and most have sitting areas for two or more people. These can look like little seating groups similar to coffee shops or full-on living rooms. Many have chairs facing fireplaces. These are great areas to begin exploring communication with Akashic beings. Inviting a being to your Akashic room is incredibly simple. All of my students do this automatically with each week's lesson. The guided meditation tells them. An animal guide will greet them, and just hearing this intention sends the energetic invitation, so the guide is there when the person arrives. It's not necessary to know the name of the spirit guide you wish to work with, but it's good to specify the type or area of responsibility they have in relationship to you. In the case of class meditations, the invitation to the student's animal guide allows an animal guide to choose to work with them, if one's not already doing so, or an entire group to do so on a rotating basis and so forth. For example, setting the intention to invite any of your personal guides who is interested or willing to work with you in this way means those beings who work with you specifically can choose singly or en masse to come meet you as it works best for them and for you. I don't recommend inviting just any being who wishes to work with you to your room. This is a bit like the difference between sending a party invitation to Mr. and Mrs. Smith versus occupant. Either the Mr. or the Mrs. could answer the invitation, and either would be welcome and appropriate. But occupant is an open invitation to absolutely anyone, which often isn't helpful and can be a waste of time. Conversation with spirit guides or any beings in the Akashics follows social rules similar to those we use here in embodied life. When you invite someone into your home, they're your guest, and you're the host. Conventions vary, but in general, a host is expected to provide hospitality, set the tone for the visit, and lead the conversation, at least initially. In the Akashics, this means guides will wait patiently until they're spoken to. They won't burst in with a message or reams of information to impart. If asked, "What do I need to know?" they often remain mute, because there really isn't anything the person needs to know, and the room's person invited them, not the other way around. Most conversations in embodied life start with a greeting. If we know the person, this is just an acknowledgement, whether a nod, a handshake, or a hug. If we don't, then introductions need to happen. Because we're encased in bodies, and most of us are neither telepathic nor truly emotionally fluent as empaths, we're relegated to using names, a series of sounds and symbols expressed in a linear manner as a means of expressing who we are. In the Akashics, no such formula is necessary. Without encasement, a being expresses who they are by being fully what they are. This makes for interesting and sometimes confusing interactions between spirit guides and embodied beings as expectations and communication styles clash. What I suggest for my students, rather than ask the name of the being they are meeting, is that they ask how the being is related to them. While this can seem awkward, it can be helpful to remember we do this all the time within our families. Mom and Dad are the most common forms of this relationship style naming, but we sometimes do a more nuanced version with grandparents, signifying one grandmother as Nona and the other as Gammy, and so on. A guide will always acknowledge who they are in relation to their person, will present a personal or visual representation of some kind, and may offer a nickname or even a name they've used in their own past embodiments. All of this combines into what we think of as a name. People have from 3 to 7 guides depending on their needs for the embodied life and their needs in general. While they work together as an integrated team for our best and highest good within the parameters of this life, there are general roles which they fulfill. The most common roles are A, physicality, making sure the physical body works within the specified parameters. This doesn't necessarily mean staying healthy, however. The body is required to signal when we're out of balance, making choices counter to our best interests, or straying from our soul path. It's also meant to support emotional processing, participate in deep healing of negativity, and encourage soul growth, all of which can cause what appear to be health crises. Our physical guide monitors this while trying to help us understand what's happening and what it all means. As a side note, for those who need one, this is the guide who shows up in childhood as our invisible friend or the advisor when our psychic gifts remain on after age 7. They're also often what is being described when a child is seeing a guardian angel. B is relationships. This guide supports us in all levels of connection. They work to position us so we're in the right place at the right time to meet someone we have a contract with. They also help us write contracts on the fly when an unexpected opportunity arises. They amplify and refine the energetic signal we put out when we're attempting to connect with a certain type of person or activity. This makes them part of the synchronicity when a job opportunity, a trip, or some other desire manifests perfectly. C is logistics. Helping us to manifest the physical things we need to survive and thrive, this guide works within the choices and parameters we set to make sure we have food, shelter, clothing, transportation, and so on. They monitor the systems we're working with and help us to navigate them, whether this be legal, medical, corporate, religious, family, or anything else structural we interact with. D is our personal spiritual path guide, making sure we keep in alignment with our soul during the journey. This isn't necessarily about enlightenment, about remembering a higher self or releasing to the next level of beingness. For some embodied beings, this is simply about being here and following through on the role, lesson, or challenge the soul has agreed to. For others, it's about remembering who they are and incorporating a more full understanding of what it means to be. And E is spiritual service. For those who come not for their own lessons or becoming, but to be in service to others, a guide will have been selected to support them in adding this aspect into their embodied life. As service comes in every form, from energy healer to NGO worker, nonprofit executive to therapist, soup kitchen employee to architect, the guide provides support to the soul in finding the best means for doing their chosen service. This includes helping them select from a variety of options, finding the right avenues to pursue within that option, and then implementing. Side note, being a spirit guide is in itself a type of service. As a soul matures, one of the career options available is to become a guide to those embodying. Not everyone has the aptitude to do this type of work, and like all skill-based activities, each being will have areas where they excel and others where they struggle. Another social rule used both here and in the Akashics is reciprocity. Have you ever noticed that if someone whispers, other people start whispering as well, even while they're looking around to figure out why everyone is whispering? Or how one person in a crowd talking loud leads to louder and louder conversations until everyone is shouting? Guides and most all beings in the Akashics will follow the lead of the host in a conversation. So if you're communicating only in thoughts or through images or gestures, then this is what they'll do as well. If you're loudly projecting, you expect everything in the Akashics to be like a dream and symbolic, then this is how they'll present information to you. What's important to note here is guides can speak just as well, if not better, than we can. They can speak in any language we're most comfortable with or which suits the conversation best. So they're more than able and often willing to hold an actual spoken conversation, which is unambiguous and full of knowledge on any subject. This can be invaluable when discussing deeply personal, emotional, or spiritual subjects. So once introductions have been made and each of you is seated, you can start asking questions as well as make suggestions. Some guides might already know what you're interested in talking over because you have burning questions you've been trying to get answers to for a long time, or the strength of your emotions around the subject are so strong, they're practically radiating from you like a shout. Others will wait for you to formally ask the questions you have out loud in language. While all Akashic beings are able to hear your thoughts and feel your feelings, it's considered incredibly rude to act on these things without your permission, especially in your Akashic room. Here are some ways that you can get better, clearer, and more conscious communication going with them. 1, give them permission to provide you clear messages when you're dreaming. In general, just as they aren't allowed to show up in a vision while you're driving or in a meeting with someone, they aren't allowed to pop into your dreams and start giving you directions on how to fix whatever problem you're working through. They can, they just aren't allowed. You can give them explicit permission to be more direct in your dreams and to help you remember those dreams. You can do this in a number of ways, such as going into meditation and explicitly saying you're adjusting the contract so they can work this way with you. Don't request they do so, state they can. Remember, you're the leader of the team and the only one who has authority to make this adjustment. You can also do this through prayer, in any means by which you practice prayer. You can state this when you're preparing to sleep, so not only is the statement going out to them, but also so you'll be open and receptive to their response. If you work with altars, you can write the statement out, then put it on the altar and activate it through prayer or lighting incense or lighting a candle. I recommend doing this hours prior to sleeping, as you shouldn't sleep with a lit candle for safety reasons, and having active prayers going on your altar can keep you from sleeping. 2, set specific times when you're available to receive message. Daily or weekly, you can state you're available for message. Keep a regular-ish schedule or select a specific place or activity which signals you're ready to receive message from them. If they know when in time you're going to be available, they can have the message ready to go. Having a specific geographic location in the world or in your home can help you get used to letting the regular world drop away and put you in the right frame of mind of being to receive their wisdom. It also signals to them it's time to start communicating. I recommend when you do this, you don't come with a bunch of questions. Instead, ask your questions or send out your requests throughout the day and week so they have time to work on them. Then be open to the answers during your specified time and place. You can also ask that the information come in a more clear fashion than a random feeling or fortune cookie statement. It might not be possible for them to provide it in any other manner, depending on other factors, but if it is, then you'll be relieved to have to work just that much less to gain clarity. 3, make sure what you're asking is not too general or too specific for a response. One of the biggest frustrations I hear from guides is their person asks for something so generic they don't have any way to answer it, such as, what do I need to know for my best and highest good? For most people, any answer to this question would contain both world peace as well as a healthy salad and everything in between. Your guides don't have the right to select one thing from all those possibilities, as doing so has a great possibility of interfering with your free will, so they remain silent. Questions or requests which are too specific often get the silence is the best answer response as well. The best example of this is the young person who just has to date this other person. They just have to. They pray to make it happen, talk to anyone who will listen, and put the not inconsiderable weight of all their energy into it, and yet it doesn't happen. Or it does, with not the best results ever. Guides aren't able to interfere with a life, so they can't stop you from any of this, but they won't help to achieve something which can't be achieved. The other person's free will is just as important as yours, and they can't interfere with it. So make sure what you're asking for is between these two extremes. Be directed in what you want, but not so specific it's impossible to deliver. 4, meet your guides halfway. You can work with your guides directly in the Akashics. Think of it as the opposite of receiving messages through dreams. Instead of them coming to you during your sleep, you come to them when you're awake. In my classes, I introduce students to their own room in the Akashics. This is their own personal space. It's filled with items which are symbols for aspects of their life here and provides a private space for them to work. This is where they meet their animal guide and can do personal work on any or all aspects of their current life, as well as get a clearer picture of what's going on for them in various aspects. It's a great way to get an eagle's eye view of what's going on so you can see the bigger picture in events. In this room, you can invite your guides to meet with you for direct conversation. They can present themselves in an embodied form, which represents their personality and their role, then speak with you directly concerning any matter you choose, or respond to questions and requests you've made. For those of you who are already students, you can do this easily using the meditations you already have. Simply think you'll meet one of your spirit guides rather than an animal guide when you enter your room, and this will send out the invitation to your guides. If you think you'll meet one, then only one will respond. If you think you'll meet the entire team, then they'll all be invited. This isn't a summons, so they may not all appear, but it will be more likely than not. For those of you who are not yet students, I've created a meditation which you can use. I'll put a link to it in the podcast description. Like with all conversations, once you get started, things usually fall into a rhythm of their own, with topics moving back and forth between you and the guide. It can be helpful to remember that in the Akashics, visual forms are part of the communication process. A guide could therefore change clothes, sex, age, or into some other form entirely in order to make a particular point, and then shift back from one sentence to the next. This can be disconcerting at first. If it causes confusion or distracts from the conversation, stop and ask the guide to express what they mean in language. Over time, and usually rather quickly, this type of shifting will become as easily understandable as shifts and symbols in dreamtime. The type of conversation I've described here also works with other Akashic beings. Those who work with angels, are dedicated to particular spirits or gods, or who wish to connect with a specific spiritual being can invite them to their Akashic room. In these situations, the relationship will likely be different than a spirit guide, and there may be specific behaviors which the being prefers concerning introductions and ending a conversation, but the form and means of communication will be the same. And that's all the time we have this week. If you're interested in knowing more, check out my website, akashicreading.com. And if you're enjoying this podcast, please consider supporting it by subscribing on Patreon. You can see all my other offerings and get regular updates about what I'm working on at patreon.com/TerryUktana. Thanks. Bye.